Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wales.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. That is not Ryan cracking a beer, that is Wes cracking a soda. Ryan is not here for this mini show for the month of January 2017.
Where is he anyways?
Ryan is on his way to the Trump inauguration. As we talked about before, Ryan, big Trump supporter.
Yes.
Very happy with the results of the election.
Did he go with Busey this time?
Yeah, him and Busey are road tripping up to D.C. for the election. And they left like a week ago because they are hitting every Mexican restaurant on the way there.
That's a lot of diarrhea.
So yeah, they're going to be filled with tacos and just pumping out diarrhea by the gallon.
I mean, it's going to take them a week.
If you're going to a Trump event of any kind,
stay away from Ryan. It's going to smell.
I think that's the way you have to go to a Trump rally, just like spitting out diarrhea. That's
wow.
How we make America great
wow.
again.
Wow. All right. Holy cow.
Okay.
We got real political real quick.
We do have some things to talk about.
Cool.
Before we get to some games, because we have some games that we're going to talk about. We didn't really talk about many games in the last show because we were talking about the Switch event, but there was another presentation.
And we didn't talk about a lot of games there. Whoa!
Hey-o! We did get this Fire Emblem Direct today at time of recording here, where it was 20 minutes long, it was pretty short, and they talked about four Fire Emblem games, which was... Yeah, well, I mean, let's go in order here.
And
the one of them is real easy to miss. So the first one that they showed is a Fire Emblem game for the 3DS.
Yep.
Which is crazy. Like, we just got Fates, I believe, a year ago in February, and now May 19th, here comes another Fire Emblem game.
Yeah.
It is a remake of the second Fire Emblem game for the Famicom, never came to North America. I believe that one was called Fire Emblem Guide, and this one's called Fire Emblem Echoes.
Echoes, and then, like, Shadow of Valentia?
Yeah, so, oh, yeah, I think you're right. Valentia, something like that.
Is it that?
Yeah.
Okay, Valentine?
Maybe. I was thinking Valerian, but Valerian is the name of
Shadows
the new...
of venereal diseases?
No, it's definitely not
that.
Not
that one? Oh, man.
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Something, that is the... new Luc Besson space sci-fi movie that's coming out this summer, which we'll probably talk about in a space world, because Luc Besson, you'll know him from...
No, that's not from Element.
Fifth Element.
Okay.
Director of the Fifth Element. He's making another movie, another space movie.
Cool.
And it's called Valerian, which is why the name is stuck in my head.
Okay.
Neither here nor there. They showed a lot of story for this 3DS game.
They really did.
And...
like the typical, like... brother and sister in a fireplace, talk about how they're going to be BFFs forever.
And then there's two warring countries.
Warms your heart, you're like, just get to stab at somebody.
I mean, right. And then see, the thing is there's some interesting stuff going on in gameplay here. And, you know, I think that they really wanted to hit that 20-minute mark, and they were still like 57 seconds short. So they padded it with a lot of story here. It's more of an open world roaming thing. So, you know, probably like more akin to what people who play like Awakening are familiar with, or Sacred Stones, or you have this world map and skirmishes. You can move around and just kind of fight whoever you want. Oh, and there's also a little bit more character customization, like you saw in maybe Shadow Dragon, where you can just kind of change character at will, it seems. Or there might be like little statues you have to go to where you can just change characters. You might not have to mess around things like second seals anymore.
There's also like some kind of weird mechanic where you actually control your character through a dungeon.
Yeah.
And like run into an enemy to initiate combat.
Yeah, there's a dungeon crawling element where I guess you're like, you have to explore this dungeon. Then when you encounter an enemy...
I hope they do some stuff with that, because that just seems so pointless in a Fire Emblem game.
It's strange.
It just seems like more to do to get before the boss. Like, it's not like before something to fight. I mean, just...
I wonder if...
It seems like time wasted.
I wonder if it's going to be something to where, like, they're breaking battles up into smaller sections. Because if you're initiating combat in these dungeons, and then you get this big map that you have to work through, that might be a little bit of a hassle. I don't think that, like, entering battles in dungeons is going to be the only way to battle.
No, probably not.
And I'm curious to see if these dungeons have any sort of, like, puzzle-solving elements or, like, Zelda-esque...
No, they have to. This is literally just a way to walk around to initiate combat. Then you're wasting my time.
Your time is absolutely meaningless. I have no problem with them doing that.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that, John. You feel so good about myself.
Yep.
There you go.
But I don't think they didn't show any like particular new units. But you know, this is cool. It's a Fire Emblem game that we never got in North America, and now you know we'll get to play it on the 3DS, surprisingly enough. It might be the first 3DS game I buy in 2017.
Wow.
Because Dragon Quest VIII just came out. I'm not going to get it, at least for a little while. Probably not ever, if I'm being honest. And Yoshi's Woolly World is coming to the 3DS in February.
Which you have that for your console. Why would you...
I already have it. I don't feel that if I need to play it again, I'll play it on the Wii U. I don't need to play it on 3DS. It's
white
fine.
Chocolate everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to take a look at the release schedule again, but I'm not sure what else is coming out in early 2017 for the 3DS. But, I mean, it's pretty much all hands on deck for the Switch at this point. So if there's nothing for 3DS until May, I understand why. It's fine. We digress. The second Fire Emblem game they showed was a brief announcement of a Fire Emblem Switch game, which is, they said 2018. That's pretty much what they showed, like the words Fire Emblem, black text on a white screen, and said, and it's coming to Switch, coming back to the home console in 2018. The end. So, okay, cool. What do you want out of a Switch game, Wes?
Wait, is it like, are we talking about the Fire Emblem Warriors?
No.
Or this is a different Fire Emblem coming
this
to console?
This is a console, a brand new console Fire Emblem
game. Oh, I didn't even see that.
Right, it's don't blink, you'll miss it.
Oh, no wonder I missed that.
I think it would be cool if they returned to like the Path of Radiance area and some of those characters. But that's just me.
No, it's like probably going to be a new story. They don't normally repeat stories.
Right. I think
they close it up so much with Radiant Dawn. I mean, there's not really much you can do with that.
Yeah, there's only a couple of, where do you go from there after you fight, like, Ashira? Who's the next, like, big bad, you know? Like,
I mean, what was she? Wasn't she, like, a god or something?
I think she was, like, the goddess of something. Something important.
Yeah, but something.
Chaos or something.
Just like another god? Oh, great, I got to fight another one.
Yeah. So, I mean, they do that in Shin Megami Tensei. Like, you keep on fighting these gods and demigods until... I think I talked about this on a previous show. At the end of Shin Megami Tensei Apocalypse, you fight God. like literal God. And you have to kill him.
Why kill God?
Never. We won't get into a theological dissection of Shin Megami Tensei because they take this very humanistic approach to theology in general. We won't get into it. So, I mean, it'd be cool to, like, see, like, Ike and the Grell Mercenaries return, but you're probably right. They don't return to a particular, like, series of Fire Emblems very often. Path of Radiance, I think, is the only example that we've gotten in North America of multiple games following a certain group of characters, unless you count all three Fire Emblem Fates games, which I don't, because they all came out around the same time.
And they all take place at the same time.
Right.
Yeah,
it's just different versions of one story. So, the third game that they showed was Fire Emblem Warriors. And that's the one, like, now we're going to show you scenes that we didn't show you in the Switch presentation. So they showed actual scenes.
Or and by actual scenes, scene. We mean scene.
Right, there was the one. You saw Krom beating the shit out of some soldiers.
It was, like, less than 10 seconds, too. Like, here's a scene of it. // Fire Emblem Warriors.
which is cool. It was cool to see Krom beat the shit out of some people, but I would like to see some different character classes other than Sword Dude.
And see what they're going to do with that.
Right, I mean, because there are a couple of different things you could do with just Sword Dude. You could have Sword Dude with a big sword Dude with a rapier, Sword Dude with a katana, like those three different Fire Emblem sword dudes. But like, we talked about this in the Switch presentation. What do you do with a knight or a war or like a berserker?
What are they gonna do with magic in this? What are they gonna do with archers?
What
are they
Pegasus with, knights?
What are they gonna do with characters that were multi-class, like Robin, who used sword tacticians. And magic? Sure. She used both.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see. I mean, I wish they would have shown more. Maybe we'll see more at E3 because they did, like they actually gave a release window for this game at the end of the trailer for this presentation. They said fall 2017, which is a surprise to me.
What do you do if they introduce Lagghouls into it? The big dragon people or
that'd be awesome
and stuff.
That's a great idea. I'm sure there'll be tons of DLC for this game because there's tons of DLC.
There's so many options that they can do with it.
That's a great idea.
I mean, I'm sad that they didn't really bring back the Lagghouls. That was only in the Fire Emblem, Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn.
Yeah,
they were a cool idea, but they weren't ever really anything you go late game with.
And I never did in particular because they don't class change, and they're just EXP sponges. Like, they'll kill a dude and they'll gain, like, 2 EXP from it. Whereas, you know, you send Roth up there to kill a dude and he gains, like, 70 EXP because he's such low level. Yeah. You know, so you rely on those things early game and you're going to have to ride them throughout the whole game because none of your other dudes are leveling up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah, like you said, I never took them late game. And actually, when I was doing multiple run-throughs of, like, the Radiant games, I would try to completely ignore them. Like, okay, I got some Liguz in this battle. You go sit in the corner for a while. Let the men do the battling here, and women, you kiddies, go sit in the corner. I think they were more successful in the handheld Fire Emblem games of doing those like creature transformation characters, because you do have things in like Fire Emblem Awakening and Fates, not only with like Manaketes with dragon stones, but other characters with beast stones that would change to like wolves and shit. So, I don't know, maybe something.
I only saw the one in Awakening. Was there more?
In Awakening, yeah, you get...
there's that weird rabbit thing.
You get the rabbit girl, and then you get a Manaketes later in the game.
Yeah, I got those,
too. And then of course, like, the offspring characters for those two also have that character class. And plus, with the second seal, you can change other people to that character class as well.
You can change it? That's weird.
It is weird. Why second seals are weird.
That's really weird.
The last game that they showed was... the mobile game, Fire Emblem Heroes.
Yep.
Here we go.
I mean, it's a free-to-play. So it's fine.
It is going to be a free download.
Come on. With microtransactions, if you want to.
It doesn't seem like microtransactions are going to be required, but I'm interested to see like how the gameplay loop is going to work, because if you need these orbs that you get from beating missions to get more characters, are you going to be able to repeat missions if you want to recruit a lot of characters? Or is it going to be more like a traditional Fire Emblem?
You probably can repeat the missions and everything.
The missions are pretty small. So I don't see why you wouldn't be able to have either a ton in there.
It makes me think of one game that I used to play. Oh, I can't remember what the...
Sonic the Hedgehog.
No.
Vector Man.
Shut up!
Or Throne Gym.
You know that doesn't help.
Right? Risk.
We're just going to sit here and have you just naming games.
Axis and Allies.
God, I hate you so much. So much. No, it was a mobile game that kind of gives me that same kind of idea. It's you
Terra Battle.
You collect the materials to summon
Final Fantasy VII.
God, shut up! I'm done with you.
Okay,
I'm done. God.
I mean, it's a pretty like mobile centric gameplay loop there, where you know you have to beat missions. You have to actually like play the game in order to get the resources you need to get better in the game. Whereas in just like traditionally structured mobile games, you can also just pay for it. Just give them some money and they'll make you good.
Yep.
They showed a few characters. There's some original ones. There are characters that are from just a variety of Fire Emblem games. The only one from the Radiant games that they showed was Ike. Hopefully there's more, because I really want to build my Grail Mercenaries team.
You and those Grail Mercenaries. I really like the Dawn Brigade.
The Dawn Brigade is cool.
I really like the Dawn Brigade.
But the Dawn Brigade is like, it's like 6 units.
Yeah.
Because you had Micaiah, you have Soth, you have Leonardo and Edward and Nolan. And then you can kind of count Aran in there as well,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, I got Aran in there.
Because you get him early on with the Dawn Brigade.
Aran was cool.
Yeah, he was a good unit.
Yeah, Aran was cool.
He's probably like the first just like soldier unit that I used that turned out to be good. Because I tried using Nephany a couple of times in Path of Radiance.
She was good in Path. I used her in Path. I enjoyed her in Path.
Nah, Gatri made her useless. Because Gatri is just...
Well, yeah. That's why you mix it up in certain runs. And by the way, John, one of us is going to have to change.
Oh, God damn it. We need to, like, call ahead and find and, like, make sure we're not wearing
very difficult. I'm wearing jeans and a black shirt. I better change because that's what John going to be wearing.
Yeah, it's either going to be jeans and a white shirt or jeans and a black shirt.
So all I got to do is wear jeans and some odd color shirt.
Yeah. I'm a simple man, Wes. You know what's going to happen here. What else do we want to say about this mobile game? I mean, there's a lot of characters. It's pretty cool. Like, the battles are super small. It looks like it's going to be like a three-on-three or four-on-four.
Four in a party.
Yeah, it's like an 8x6 grid, and that's it. And there's going to be, like, terrain advantages, and like, the weapon triangle is in it as well. So it's going to retain some of, like, level ups and stats, so it retains, like,
the traditional fight. Yeah, red beats green, green beats blue, and blue beats red.
And you want to know what bows are? Bows are gray.
Bows are gray.
I didn't see any Pegasus Knights, now that I think about it.
I was on the board that decided the color of the regulations manual. We kept it gray.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I ruined that quote. But still.
The entire camp is now run by a single Australian man. That show is so good.
So good.
But yeah, I mean, I'll probably delete, like, I'm running really badly out of space on my iPhone, and I'm not,
like, what, a 5C or something?
Yeah, I think it's like a 5C or a 5S, I'm not sure, but I'll be upgrading at the end of February when I'm due for another upgrade, but until then, like, I'll probably delete Mario Run because I don't plan on, like, getting the full version anytime soon, but Fire Emblem is free, so I'll make some space for it and just get Mario Run later on.
Just remember, John, when you're sitting there playing your Fire Emblem mobile game and you are tempted to put money into it to buy orbs, but if it happens, just remember, you probably have your 3DS in your backpack with Fire Emblem. Just go for that. Just go reach for that. Oh, yeah, I could play the actual game.
I have Fire Emblem Awakening Digital on my 3DS. Like an adult. But see, like, if the game is really good and I end up spending a lot of time with it, I might throw them a couple bucks. Like, I've recently considered, like, upgrading, like, my item space in Pokemon Go, as well as, like, the amount of Pokemon I can hang on to in Pokemon Go. Just because, like, the game has been out for 6 months. I spent a ton of time in it. If it cost me a few bucks to, like, carry more stuff and carry more Pokemon, like, at this point, they've kind of earned my money. Like, I'll throw them $5 because of how much I've gotten out of it.
I figure out what this game was. It's driving me absolutely insane.
Oh, the game you're talking about with, like, the resource gathering?
Not like resource gathering. It was like,
Do you get stuff you get from winning battles? Is that what you're talking about?
Like, collecting materials to buy chests and or something, and you're able to get more characters to use. And you level them up and everything. I forget what the stupid game was called, but it got really addicting, and it kind of absorbed too much of my life. So I kind of wanted to throw my phone into a lake.
I mean,
it got really bad.
while you're looking for it, I'll just mention that there are some, like, upgrade things in Fire Emblem Heroes for the phone that look pretty interesting. I mean, you recruit a character and he's like 3 stars. He's got 3 bronze stars. Then as you use the character more and more, they'll be able to not only level up, but upgrade their effectiveness. So, you know, you'll end up with a character with 4 stars and that are silver, or 5 stars that are gold. So you can pick your favorite characters, and just because you get them when they're weak doesn't mean they won't be stronger later. Or, you know, if you get a really good dice roll, so to speak, you might get a really good character just out of the box. Like, you might get Sorin with Adept, you know?
It's like something Summoners or... can't remember the name of it.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm sure you'll find it one day. But let's take a break, because I think that's all, like, about Fire Emblem, yeah? Do you want to say anything?
No.
Okay. I mean, it's 4 Fire Emblem games, well, 3.5 Fire Emblem games in the next 2 years, which is crazy. This is a series that, before Awakening, like, if Awakening didn't do well for them, they were going to stop making Fire Emblem games. So it's crazy that now this is a game that, over the next 2 years, there's going to be 4 versions of it, or 4 incarnations of it. It's just...
Yep. It's blown up. I'm happy for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool. So, let's take a break and then come back with some games that we've actually played. Brave Frontier, huh?
Brave Frontier, that was the game. It was driving me absolutely insane.
Pretty good?
I mean,
I think you've talked about this one before.
It got really addicting. Like, it got bad. Like, I ended up putting actual money into it. I think the most I put into it is maybe around $10. But still, I mean,
I mean, you. I'm pretty sure you've talked about that one on a podcast before.
It's
that
a good familiar. Game. I may reinstall it and give it another shot, but
get ready to use that Google survey money.
That Google survey. Oh, I need to use it for something. I'm not doing it for Pokemon anymore.
Have you tapped out of Pokemon Go?
Not really tapped out. It's just I don't go anywhere to actually play the game. I'm just sitting there at work. So I mean,
you're just hitting the same Pokestop and catching the same
Rattata. There's two in my store. Literally in my store. There's two goddamn Pokestops.
It's fine.
It just taunts me. Oh
my God! I have. Let's see. I'm gonna do probably three games here. You got some on tap?
I could talk about one.
Okay.
Maybe two if you want to hear about Dark Souls, but you know how the game goes. They just tweak little things.
Why don't I dive in with one, then I'll let you tag in, and then we'll see how we're doing. See what we feel like talking about. Advance Wars 2. Black Hole Rising. That's the subtitle. So, I've been...
You're a Black Hole Rising.
I know. I've been complaining about no new Advance Wars for quite some time now, so I decided I'll just buy the one I haven't played yet and pretend like it's new. So, this game, I'm not sure how far I am in it, because it's broken up like Advance Wars 1, where you have the four different continents, and each continent represents a nation. But instead of like playing through and recruiting more COs and having this big pool of COs that you can play through from start to finish, what you do is like every continent you're playing with that particular nation's commanding officers. So you know, the when you're an orange star, you're fighting against the Black Hole, but you're using Andy, Sammy, and Max. And then when you're Blue Moon, you switch up to their COs, Olaf and Colin, who I think is new in this game, and Grit. And it continues in that fashion. And I am up to the, I think it's Yellow Comet, I think is the name of the nation, but the missions, they're a bit different. It reminds me of Days of Ruin, because in games like Advance Wars GBA and Advance Wars Dual Strike, it's a lot of here's your base, here's the enemy base, here's all your starting units, have at it. Whereas in Advance Wars 2, there are more missions of here is your small group of units. You're not able to build anymore. Figure out how to finish this mission. And it's a bit more emphasizing careful tactics rather than just withstanding an initial onslaught and then building a bigger force than your enemy. So it does have that extra tactical layer on top of it. And that's not to say that there aren't missions where you can't build troops. It's probably split about half and half. I actually just played this mission where you have a very limited set of troops, and your enemy has this big, huge wave of units just coming at you, and you have to essentially bottleneck them until you can get your planes all the way around the map and attack them from behind. So yeah,
make them take it in the rear.
Right, exactly. That's how you do it. Just ram it right up in there.
Yeah, without them knowing.
Right.
Yeah. Surprise.
Just sneak up and pound it right into the rear. Exactly what you do. It's tactics.
Pretty straightforward. What could go wrong in that
right
kind of mentality?
Right. And so far in this game, I haven't really encountered like the super overpowered CO powers like you get in Dual Strike, or like the super crazy tank units. Like, I have fought against things like Neo tanks. I don't think I've seen a mega tank yet, but I haven't been able to build them. And I've been able to build things like cruisers, but there haven't been like crazy powerful things like aircraft carriers.
Mammoth tanks.
Oh yeah, Command and Conquer.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. You get a couple of mammoth tanks and you win.
That popped in my head. Sorry.
But we use that. That's okay. This is the mini show.
Tesla coils. Oh.
I played Red Alert a fair amount, but I played the original 1995 Command and Conquer a bit more, and there were missions where, and it's gratuitous, because at a certain point you can just, you know, take your group of six tanks and win. But I would like fill a screen with mammoth tanks and just have this wall of tanks. And these early RTS games, what they do is they just have this stock wave of units that they will send at you to assault your base. And in the beginning, that wave of units is a little bit daunting. But then once you like you get your base going, your defense is set up, it's no big deal. You're able to build your defense where you can withstand that attack and then start building up your own force to counterattack. They would send at me like three light tanks and some flamethrower dudes. And against this wall of like 18 mammoth tanks, I'm like, they would just die instantly. And there was this whole field of craters in front of my wall. But I don't know if I would let it run for like a half hour. They just keep attacking me. It's fine. Just keep on
going. Just keep on going.
Yeah.
I don't know why this popped in my head, but Rattler Aftermath,
yeah.
The map The Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, sure. That was a skirmish map.
Yeah, that was a good map. There was something weird about that. Like
It was the villagers. The villagers would assault your base.
And they exploded.
Yeah, there were like exploding ones that have like lightning powers, like Tesla coils. Yeah it got was crazy. So
weird. That was a weird map.
The key to that one, and like you weren't even out to kill the villagers in that one. Like you were like fighting other people. I think you could even play online with that one, and you would have to withstand these villager attacks too, and then
try to make like the weirdest noises when they blew up too. Mm-hmm. Like it was very odd.
The key to that one was actually attack dogs, because attack dogs.
Oh yeah, that was it. That was it.
But
and they had the chrono thing where you teleported dudes.
Oh, sure.
The Iron Curtain made the dude invulnerable,
mm-hmm.
which you always put on Mammoth Tick. No reason to put on anything else.
Of course.
And then you had like the portable versions of both of them.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the Hills Have Eyes was a cool map because what you could do is, you know, once you get your defenses set up, you could actually build a whole bunch of just small power plants
mm-hmm.
and sell them off. And with power plants, there's a small chance that you get a technician out of it. And technicians are completely useless units throughout all of Command & Conquer, except on this one map where they act like those villagers. So you might get a technician that shoots Tesla coil lightning out.
Oh my god.
Which is crazy. Do you remember the one with, oh god, what was it? It was like on the moon or something, and it changed probably the way not. All units behaved?
No, I don't remember that.
Like, medium tanks now fired missiles or some shit? It was crazy. My god. It was crazy. James would remember the name of that map. He played Tiberian it a lot.
Tiberian Sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Red Alert 2. Oh my god, there's so many good games.
I think Red Alert 2 was probably the last one I played.
Yeah.
I didn't move on to
Red Alert 2 was good.
I'm sure.
Red Alert 2 was good.
But anyway, Advanced Wars.
Advanced Wars is a game.
Yeah. And see, like, the different nations that you go to will have it set up to where, okay, these missions you're going to play as this commanding officer. And then, like, the last mission for that particular nation, you get to choose what commanding officer you want to play as. But it's cool because it forces you to think about what their powers, what their superpower as a commanding officer does to give you the advantage within that particular map. Everything feels much more crafted rather than build as much shit as you can and tank rush. But anyway, I'm enjoying it. I'm stuck on a couple of maps, and the maps that I get stuck on always involve Fog of War, because Fog of War like really prevents you from doing any advanced planning. Like if you can't see them, you don't know what they're gonna throw at you, so you can't plan ahead for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, what do you got on tap? I think that's enough about Advanced Wars for now.
I started playing a very odd game. I haven't played it in a couple of weeks, but it was called. Originally, it was called Don't Starve.
And oh, they sure.
Came out with a Don't Starve Together. And this is a weird, goofy game, and I haven't figured it out yet because I haven't played Dark.
Don't Souls. Yes.
Dark. I got Starve. Dark Souls in my head because I was playing it right before here. I came over. Don't Starve. I didn't play that, which was I think like the single player. One and it had like the campaign and the different levels and stuff like that, the bosses you kill and blah 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Don't Starve Together is like essentially a multiplayer thing, so you can set up your own set thing and then just survive, because the whole thing is don't starve,
right?
And it's cool because there's different kinds of characters you can select as your dude, and they have pros and cons to them. Or you got the one character, I forget his name, it's like Maximilian or something like that, he has no detriment. And they're goofy little cartoony little guys, and it's just a single a board that you walk around on, and you go and harvest materials and craft items and make your little base sort of thing. Just like a typical survival kind of game, except in this weird cartoony little world to it. food's kind of tricky to come by. I don't really like how difficult it is to get decent food going. Pretty much just berries or catch rabbits and stuff. I haven't figured out a good, efficient way to keep a good amount of food.
There's no agriculture quite yet.
Yeah, there is, but it doesn't really give you much. It's very odd.
So I want to go back to like the setting up the camp thing, because the crux of the game is you have a certain amount of time before it gets dark. And when it gets dark, you have to be back at your base.
You need to be in light.
Okay.
Because if you're in the dark, then you just die. It's just kind of weird. Just something about that game. Nighttime is very bad. You just die.
But like setting up your base is essentially like you have this barrier of light so that the things can't get at you.
Yeah, which typically when we play with as a group and everything, it's just the one campfire. And we just all just hang out by the campfire.
Oh, okay.
Or we have torches and just keep torches lit and you're good to go. Which at night it's interesting too, because you can sit there and try to do your other things. But then as the days progress, eventually you'll see these hands, these shadow hands, reach for the campfire to extinguish it. Hmm. So you have to sit there and fight off the hands to keep your light source going. And you had to keep it fueled and everything with wood and stuff, so...
So I was going to say, like, could you just keep on building campfires out and out until you have enough, like, room to where you could actually still gather resources during the nighttime?
Can't really do that, because they're going to be extinguished by the hands, and also you're going to run out of fuel. But, you know, there's a lot of exploration to this game, a lot of moving around and different biomes and everything. Just like a typical survival game, the things that really make it interesting, one, is the characters, because a lot of them are very odd. Like, there's this lumberjack that really specializes in axes and cutting down trees.
It's a lumberjack.
But
he's okay.
But there's a downside to him. If you do it too much, then you find out his dark secret, which that's all it says in his description is, but he has a dark secret. And his dark secret is he's a werebeaver. So you cut down too many trees, you have a thirst for wood, and you turn into a beaver, which has detriments. You can't really collect anything, can't really do much except cut down more trees.
Okay. How long does the beaver...
I don't know. I haven't played them.
Okay.
There's another character that's literally a big spider. Right. So, like, spiders are friendly to him, and he can eat monster meat, and he grows a beard. And you can get a razor to cut the beard off, and when you do that, it's silk, so you can use silk for materials. He's a really cool Weber. First time playing, I'm flipping through the list of characters. I'm like, who am I going to be? I've never played this game. I don't know what I'm doing. So I see this one character, and John, you're going to get a kick out of this. The character's name is Wes.
Very good.
And so I'm like, well, I have to play Wes. That's my name.
You do?
We do. He's a little mime.
Uh-huh. Good. So far, so good.
Who dies easily.
Uh-huh.
It says so in the description. This guy dies easily. And his, like, benefit is he practices balloonomancy.
Good.
Which is the art of making balloons.
Yeah. That sounds spot on. It's like they made the game after you.
So his thing is he'll, like, make a balloon. It'll just kind of float there. And that's it. If it pops, it deals damage in a small area around it. And that's all there is to the balloons. They just kind of float there and chill. The purpose of Wes, I found out, is to give a challenge to veteran players. Because he gets hungry quicker. He has low HP. He deals low damage. The dude just sucks.
Right.
So the first time I'm playing this, I'm going, why am I hungry again? And everybody's like, I don't know. Why are you hungry again? Because the entire time I'm just bitching about food. Because the second I get full, I'm hungry again.
That should just be a thing in video games from now on. There should always be a character named Wes who just sucks. Or conversely, like if you're playing Zelda and you name, for some reason, if you enter Link's name as Wes, he just takes double damage for no reason. That should just be a thing now.
Characters got three things you need to keep track of. There is their hunger. There is their regular overall HP, and then their sanity.
Oh, good.
So,
like in Eternal Darkness.
Yeah, so eventually you're going around, like, you can catch a rabbit for food, and then cook the rabbit, and then, you know, eat the food. But I've been doing that, and then I realized there was another option in between the cooking and after catching it that I've been skipping, which is murder the rabbit. So apparently I've been cooking these rabbits alive.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't realize
that. Poor creatures.
But doing this hurts your sanity because you're seeing they're murdering animals and just little things like that. Certain monsters will hurt your sanity.
Like skipping the step hurts your sanity, or actually doing the step and murdering them hurts your sanity?
I think just doing it in general just hurts my sanity. I can't really remember. I think even cooking them alive hurts my sanity. Just
okay.
Because I'm killing an animal.
Sure.
or if I'm being attacked by a creepy monster, or if I'm out really long during the night.
So they want you to, like, just eat berries the whole time? Is that what it is?
No, you just gotta manage it. And the way you replenish your sanity is by collecting flowers.
Okay.
And do pretty things like that. You can make a little flower hat and wear that, and that helps your sanity decrease as... helps your sanity stay full and things like that.
That sounds about right.
If your sanity gets really low, you start seeing monsters and ghosts. If you die, then you see these little shadows walking around. These monsters are like, what are those things? And so it's like a mental thing.
That's awesome.
Dying sucks in this game because there's only like one spot you can go to and revive, and then that's used up. Hmm. So you have to like somehow repair it to use it again to if you die again. And it's really fun because you die and you got this little ghost of your character and you just move around and there's nothing you can do. You're just moving around for no reason. It's a fun little quirky game. I enjoy it.
That's cool though. Like, yeah. Like ever since Eternal Darkness, I thought it'd be cool if like more games use that sort of sanity meter where, you know, the more it depletes, the more the game fucks with you. Like Eternal Darkness, I think we've probably talked about this multiple times before, actually did more stuff with like where it fucks with the hardware or makes it look like it's fucking with the hardware of the GameCube where it looks like the GameCube turned off. And no, it didn't actually turn off. And you like go to turn it, like you like go to reset it, and the game just kind of like continues from where it left off. It's really cool. It kind of tricks the hardware into doing some stuff. And then like if your sanity meter gets really low, it'll like tell you it deleted your save file, which is crazy. It doesn't actually do these things, but it does things like where it's breaking the fourth wall of the game to where like, hey, you're doing poorly in this game, so go do fuck with like the real you in real life. But yeah,
Sandy affects the characters a little bit. Like I forgot to mention, there's this one character called, I forget her name, but her thing is she starts with a lighter and a teddy bear.
Good.
A teddy bear helps your sanity because if she goes insane or she has low sanity, she'll just randomly start setting things on fire. Which would be really annoying. You just walk into your base, all of a sudden, there goes your chest of all your stuff because it just burst into flames. Just
well, your base. You mentioned that essentially just kind of gather around the.
Yeah, ones, it's just
the,
whatever the you just plop stuff and like, you need to build like a science station in order to make certain items.
Okay, so there are like things like you construct within that base.
Yeah,
are there any sort of like defensive things like can you
set
up a wall?
Really, okay. No. You can build walls,
but like things will still try to put out your fire. Even like they'll just kind of.
Yeah, because it's just a shadowing hand.
Right.
I don't know. We haven't really gotten very far because every single time we go back to it, the one person that we play with, she was always like, "Let's just start a new one." But like, why? We're not even a week through the first one.
I mean, that's like, isn't that like starting Dokapon Kingdom over and over again every time?
I don't understand. Like, I forget what day it is, but you randomly get attacked by a bunch of dogs.
Okay.
So these giant dogs would just attack you. They're like pig dogs. I don't even know.
So is it so weird? Do you just keep on going until you can't play anymore, or is there like an actual like goal you need to survive this?
In
many
the actual
days?
Don't starve. I don't know if it was a goal or anything, but there's like bosses and things to do. Oh, okay. Like there's a different scenario called Shipwrecked, where you're kind of like you're shipwrecked and you can build boats and go out in the ocean. There's like a boss I briefly saw in a video of it. I saw that's called like the Quacken, which is like this big. Like
Kraken
a
duck.
Kraken duck thing, yeah. I think it was called.
Of course
I don't even
it is.
Know. Like, there's bosses and stuff. There's actual things to do, but I don't know what you can do in the Don't Starve together. Because that seems like the multiplayer version of the single player. Because in the single player, like, you had to unlock all these characters by playing through the adventure mode. But in Don't Starve, you just have them all.
Right.
And certain things are different in Don't Starve. Like, some of your character's abilities aren't as good as they are in Don't Starve. And as they are in Don't Starve Together, not so good because you're with a party in group, so they're trying to balance it out so much. I don't know, it just seems weird. I haven't figured it out yet. I may just get Don't Starve and see how that is, because that seems like a lot of fun.
All right. Well, if you want to try it, I have it on my Wii U.
Yeah, there you go.
Which I don't think Don't Starve Together is available on the Wii U, which would be cool, but, you know. And actually, Don't Starve.
It's like $10 on Steam.
Yeah, so. And I think that's what I paid for it on Wii U. And actually, when it came out, which was one of the big reasons I got it, even though I had no one to give this code to, when you bought it, you actually got the game, and then you got another code that you could give
that's
to someone
That's Don't
else.
Starve Together. They do that with Don't Starve Together.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's good. That's a
yeah,
smart
when you
way
buy it,
it,
they give you a code for a friend.
So there you go.
So that's... I bought it. Well, I didn't buy it. Mitch bought it and gave me his code.
Mm-hmm.
And then... We were talking with Jeremy, and we were playing Some Days to Die, but then we wanted to play Don't Starve together. So I bought it for Jeremy. And I think he's going to give the extra code to his wife, Natalie, to play.
There you go.
So, I mean, I don't know what's going on with that, but...
It's like a virus. Just keeps on spreading.
Just keeps going. We're all... And, you know, just don't starve.
Cool. Speaking of things that will eventually kill you, I want to talk about one other game before we take a break here. And that game is Mighty No. 9.
Oh, my... Oh,
I beat it.
Oh,
I finished God. It.
Who cares?
The credits rolled.
Oh, God.
So, last I left off...
Did it get better?
No.
You say that like I'm a dumbass.
No, of course it didn't.
What?
No, this game was a train wreck, start to finish.
Oh,
last I left off, I think I was talking about the stage with like the helicopter reporter dude where the boss fight was really messy because you had these pits that if you fall down, you die, it's an instant kill. But there are parts of the boss fight where those pits aren't no longer visible. The game like zooms in, you can no longer see where you're supposed to be jumping.
That's nonsense.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I beat that boss. And, you know, most of the other levels that I played after that suffer from the same problems as the rest of the game. It's mostly technical issues. Frame rate is shitty at certain points, and especially in points where you have to move and react quickly to things. So you end up skipping some frames, landing in a place you don't want to land, and then you're dead. And this is especially true in this one level where you are fighting. I think it's like some dude with a sword, kind of like the Mega Man Zero version of a robot master in this game. And there's traffic. You're running along along the top of these cars in traffic, and like billboards will come by and try to smack you in the face, or there'll be enemies that sort of like drop these exploding probes that will float slowly toward you. And there are parts where like. The dude will come on, like the robot master will appear and like slash one of the cars you're trying to stand on and blow it up.
Oh yeah, I did see you playing this one.
And that one again was a bit of a mess because of technical issues. Like if it were like smoothed out and moved more fluidly, it might be a good stage. But it wasn't, so it's not.
Especially the way they hacked up the cars. Like sometimes when you hacked up a car, there really wasn't anywhere else for you to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
it just the timing was really bad for it.
Yeah, and a lot of like the hazards in this stage are just memorized. Like mess up a few times, memorize, and try to do it better. Which to me, in a game where you are wanting to like move fast, there's like a lot of twitch based gameplay. I don't think it meshes well. I don't think it matches up to the gameplay style.
Which, it sucks when there's games like that where it kind of takes away the skill aspect. You're like, I really just got to die a bunch of times, and eventually I'll get it by muscle memory. Like,
yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
Like you guys with Contra, but somehow that's still enjoyable.
No, what are you talking about?
You guys know exactly where some things are coming.
Contra does move fluidly. I don't know, like Contra, there's just something about... Like, yeah, you're memorizing where things are, but enemies might pop out at different times. I don't know. I don't know what it is about Contra 3, because I know what you mean. Like, you memorize where things are going to be and, like, how to beat certain things, yeah. And then you just run through it.
It's still a skill base. Like, you need to be able to dodge their certain attacks, because they're not always attacking the exact same way. And it feels good
yeah. to actually, like, move around and jump and shoot all the different weapons in this game, where like, nothing feels good in Mighty No. 9. Everything's clunky and clumsy. There's another stage, and actually, this was a really neat idea for a stage, because you're in, like, this museum or something, and effectively, you have, you know, a certain number of screens you can run to the left, and a certain number of screens you can run to the right, and it all wraps around. So you just have this loop of screens that you're going through, and as you're going through and fighting enemies, the robot master boss will pop out, and he'll try to shoot his gun at you, and there's plenty enough warning to where it's easy to dodge, but... It leads you in this loop around the stage two or three times, and every time that you're re-entering an area you've already been, different enemies will show up, or more enemies will show up. And, like, if you kill them off, they won't be there the next time around, but, like, different stage hazards will show up. And this is a really cool idea, and that boss fight actually wasn't a total pain in the ass either. Like, it was probably the best stage in the game, except that if you died... You have to start the whole stage over again. So you have to begin the loop of wrapping around the stage two or three times again and do it all from scratch.
Okay, that's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird because they could have like had these checkpoints, not like physical checkpoints to where you got to this point, so now you're going to respawn here. That would be tough to do because you can just kind of go in any direction you want. But there's these audio cues where the robot master boss will like pop out and he'll say something different to you. And then you'll come up to him, you'll shoot him a couple times, he'll disappear. And then the next time he appears, you'll get another audio cue. And those could have easily been your checkpoints. Mm. But I don't know. I don't think they put too much thought into the design of this game. Final boss was fine. Not too easy, not too hard. Just kind of... I watched a video, because by the time I got to the final boss, I was just done with the game. I watched a video on someone else beating. I was like, okay, I see the patterns. There you go. Now you're dead. Easy enough. So yeah, Mighty No. 9. It was a game. Mighty No. 9 was a thing that happened. And...
I'm sorry if you put money into it.
It was $20. Who gives a shit?
I'm talking about those who supported the Kickstarter.
Oh God, yeah, those poor people. Oh my God. They have been terribly abused.
Oh, like, that's just wrong.
A friend of mine at work, he Kickstarted the game, and he didn't get his code until after the game physically came out, like 3 days after. So he paid to get it like before everyone else, and ended up getting it after everyone else. Yeah, there's all sort of like nightmare stories. Like, yeah, it's funny because the other game that we're going to talk about after we take a break is another Kickstarter game that I think was executed a whole lot better, even though it again had a few delays. But I don't know. The game Mighty No. 9 feels like they started making it when they started delaying it. Because when they delayed it the first time, they're like, oh, okay, well, we want to start. Like, we want to add some polish. We want to get this game. And then they delayed it again, like network issues. And then again, because of like online leaderboards or some bullshit.
And then again, because one guy was on vacation. It just right. wasn't a good time. Like,
and this game, for how much it was delayed, it feels like this game was rushed because things were not running optimally. And it doesn't look particularly good. Like, if you go back and you can find like 15 seconds worth of footage from when they initially kickstarted the game, like here's a quick sample of what we want the game to look like, that looks so much better. Like the character models are better, the lighting effects are better, the overall like atmosphere of the stage they were showing looks so much better than what they came up with. I don't know what they did with $4 million here, or however much they ended up with.
Like, pure nonsense.
It is this crazy interesting train wreck that I hope one day we all can look back and like, people have gotten over their anger. We can really look at like, what was it that actually happened here? And hopefully people will be willing to talk about it because shit's going down. Like shit went down here and I'd like to know what it was. But anyway, let's take a break and then come back with a couple more games. You want to do, like, 2 minutes on Dark Souls?
I'll do a two-minute thing, because I've talked about Dark Souls 1 and 2 in the past and everything like that, but Dark Souls 3 came out.
What are the big changes?
It came out with another DLC already for it, which is great. Well, it's been out for a while, so, you know, it's justified. The second DLC is already kind of rumored.
When they do DLC, is it extra quest campaign kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's a whole other area. Okay. New bosses, new weapons. Nice. Just a few things. No, it's just more game.
How do they add extra areas? Is like a part of the world map that you hadn't seen before, just kind of unlocked?
Well, Dark Souls 1, made this really nice world and created a very nice story and a lot of lore in this legend, and it was great. And then Dark Souls 2 supposedly took place, and you see traces of the Dark Souls 1 world here and there, but it took place like thousands of years later. And like,
okay.
And but they were separate, but then you'll get little tiny references here and there with this, mm-hmm. but it was still like its own thing. And then Dark Souls 3, I don't know where it's supposed to go chronologically, because there's like very, like, hey, remember this guy? This is this. Like, they're heavily referencing Dark Souls 1. Like, and Dark Souls 2 is like, nobody really knows about because it was so long ago. But in Dark Souls 3 is like, yeah, this crap happens. Like, it's kind of weird where they do chronologically with it.
So are you again like working through a lot of like the same geography as in Dark Souls 1?
There's some areas that they referenced, and some areas that are very similar in design, like Anne Orlando is back, which was a big
Say that again?
Anne Orlando. It's two words.
Okay.
What did you think I said?
It sounded.
You thought like I said anal something. Didn't
no,
you?
No, no. It sounded. It sounded like the second word you were saying was Orlando. Like Orlando's in the
Orlando's
game.
Orlando's in the game.
Go on.
And Orlando,
uh-huh.
Which was a big fan favorite in Dark Souls 1. It was kind of like the middle point, and it was very epic of a place. But they took some things from all the Dark Souls games and kind of mixed it in with this. When they went to Dark Souls 2, the kind of feel and the mechanics kind of changed. Things were a little bit slower paced in movement. The roles weren't as drastic. Your character didn't move quite as fast. It was kind of more controlled. And Dark Souls 1, everything was more drastic. It was more looser of a control. And they kind of brought that back with Dark Souls 3. They really took a lot of stuff from Dark Souls 1 and brought that back in with it. They changed weapons again a little bit. A lot of weapons from the old games, but now they have like their own weapon art. So every weapon has their own moveset, and now they have this extra ability thing they could do. Like something is just as simple as a stance that would lead into a really good attack, or something like one sword you like stick in the ground and does this big AoE thing to like hit people away from you. One sword just literally catches on fire, so it gives itself a big buff.
Good.
Spells are different in this one. They kind of went back to the Demon Souls mentality for spells, where instead of they have X amount of uses, you have a magic bar, and you're just tapping for your magic bar, and then you gotta replenish it in order to use spells again. So they brought that back.
Just like standard like RPG stuff with MP.
So they bring a lot of references here and there and everything.
When they had it to where like it was a certain amount of uses, it was then your spell just broken?
No, it wasn't broken. You just when you had to rest that bonfire again. Because bonfires were kind of like the save points, but it replenishes your healing item, it replenishes your health, it replenishes everything. Mm. And so they brought that in there. But the original question was about the DLC. I just remember what it was. I just kind of trailed off. But in Dark Souls 1, they brought this little side area called the Painted World of Arendelle?
Okay.
I'm trying to remember.
However you say it is going to be totally fine.
In Dark Souls 1, it literally was you had to find this item, and then you had to walk up to this big painting in this one room that's off to the side in Anne Orlando, and you go into this painted world. And it's this whole little world.
You're saying two words, but all I'm hearing is Orlando.
Yeah. In this one, they brought it back. So you're going kind of back to Arendelle again. And so it's just you just teleport this realm and boom, there you are.
Hmm.
That's how they managed the DLC in this. In Dark Souls 2, the DLCs, they literally had mapped out little paths to lead into them. So they had little paths marked out in the game. And you see these weird statues in Dark Souls 2. You're like, what the hell is this for? And DLCs came out and were like, oh, okay, that's what they're for. Because they lead to the DLC area. So they had it all planned out. But it's fun. It's really good. I think in difficulty-wise, it's probably the easiest. Some bosses in Dark Souls 2 were really mean. And then Dark Souls 1 overall, I think, is probably the toughest of them. But there's some really big, really cool enemies with this that they introduced. I like it. I thought it's great.
Cool.
I've played through it a few times now. I'm still going at it. So.
Good. How long does it take to like run through just like main quest stuff?
First run, I was around 40 hours.
Dude, how many times have you played it now?
I probably... Because I have another run that's around 25 hours, and another one that's around 25, and then I got...
No, we need to have an intervention for you here.
A ton of this fucking game.
No, I've played 200 hours of Xenoblade Chronicles X, and I think you're like taking this to an excess.
It's pretty nuts. But you could really, because there's so much in this game. There's just so much to do in them, and they mapped it out really well. The way, like, the routes that you can go in this game, really cool. You go in this one direction to kill these couple of guys. Then when you kill all of them, it literally teleports you back to the spot and goes, you need to go this way now. And so you go that way. Like, it's really well how they mapped that out. But the world record for the speed run is 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Nice.
So okay. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I watched that today. It was pretty cool. Dark Souls speed runs are pretty epic, in my opinion, because it's one of the speed runs where they really break down to, like, the seconds. They're like, if I do this little move in this moment, I can save 1 second. And that's being in a Dark Souls speedrun. Mm. But yeah, it's great. My favorite thing in that game is bleed weapons. They're my favorite.
Yeah, I think you mentioned those quite a few times
before. Oh, they're so good. I love them.
Well, let's move over to something very closely related to Dark Souls. That is Shantae, Half Genie Hero.
So I'm gone. Until next week, everybody.
This game, I finished it. And it is a short game. This game, and you know, kind of similar to what I was saying about Mighty No. 9, how, like, Mighty No. 9 feels unfinished because it is broken and it sucks. Whereas Shantae, Half Genie Hero feels unfinished because there's not really much to it. So Shantae is essentially a Castlevania game where, you know, you go through a level, you fight a boss, and you get a different power-up that will help you in some way. But this one is, even, like, Pirate's Curse was much more linear than you would normally consider, like, a Castlevania or a Metroid game. Half Genie Hero takes an even, like, bigger extent, where it's pretty much you run through these 5 or 6 isolated levels, and you can go back in those levels and explore and find things like upgrades or extra powers or heart containers. But you can essentially just run through the game start to finish in linear fashion as if you were playing like a Mario game. To me, if that's going to be the play style, I was expecting a few more levels than what there was. Because there's like different speedrun challenges. Like, hey, can you run through the game in 4 hours collecting 100% of everything? Like, yeah, that's probably not all that demanding to run through the game in just 4 hours and get 100% of everything. The only obstacle in your way there is that some power-ups cost money and you have to do farming for cash for those, which is just an irritant in any game. But like the levels,
except for Harvest Moon.
Nothing is objectionable in Harvest Moon. That game is perfect.
I've never
once played one.
But the farming in that game, I hear, is just,
I mean, it's a dating simulator with farming, as Ryan would say.
That's a joke.
Yes, I know.
You're actually farming it.
Yeah.
God, I hate you so much.
I'm aware. I was going to gloss right over that. I was giving you an out there. So
I thought it was funny.
It was not.
I thought it was very humorous.
It wasn't. It was a swing and a miss.
I'll tell you, our listeners are cracking up right now over my Harvest Moon farming joke.
I doubt it.
I mean, it's still a terrible game, but
that game you've never played?
Yeah. It's god awful.
So
I'm not gonna farm and date a cow. This is nonsense.
I don't think you date the, I don't think bestiality is in this game. I'm skeptical.
Oh, that is in these games. I definitely don't want anything to do with it.
Okay, you go for the bestiality.
You betcha, buddy.
Okay. So there, and like I was saying about Shantae, it being kind of short. Like, the levels themselves are a decent size. Like, and it takes a good amount of time to run from start to finish in any particular level. The levels don't feel like they're abbreviated, but the game in general, like, you get, like, all these power-ups. Like, there's a power-up that you get that turns you into a spider. And what does the spider do? The spider can climb on ceilings, which is cool.
With their hair?
No, the spider does not climb on ceilings with its hair. It just climbs on ceilings because that's what fucking spiders do. Oh. So there is one or two practical uses for it throughout the game.
What, hair?
No, the spider. Oh. The spider power.
My bad.
Then there's another power-up that's the crab has a decent amount of uses for collecting.
What does it do with its hair?
The crab doesn't have hair.
Oh, poor crab.
The most useful ones are probably the mermaid power-up, which, again, nothing with the hair.
Okay.
And the elephant, again, nothing with the hair.
But how cool would it be? I mean, I would support this game that the elephant's walking around with his giant freaking ponytail, and it's whipping people with it. I mean, that'd just be, like, the funniest thing in the world.
That's
like, it grabs somebody with his tail, pulls it under its foot, and then crushes his head in. I mean, that'd be amazing.
In a graphic explosion of blood and bone.
That'd be amazing. Just that'd be great.
Shantae Dark Souls.
I would support this.
That's a crossover game we need.
I mean, all I gotta do is make a character, give her a ponytail and purple hair, and boom, I got Shantae. That's all I gotta do.
Oh, that's a good idea. Shantae Metroid.
Because people even cosplay in Dark Souls. They, like, try to make armor. All right, you're talking about Shantae.
I'm sure they do. But there's another power-up, like the Harpy, which should be really super useful because it just allows you to fly, so you can just kind of move anywhere. There's not really all that many practical applications for it. And the mouse.
How's its hair?
You can't even see the hair. The mouse is very tiny.
That's a shame.
It's a few pixels large. The mouse gets a power-up, and all of, like, your animal transformations get these power-ups. The mouse gets a power-up where it can bite, so it can do very small damage to enemies, but...
Wow, what power-up.
But it's totally fucking useless, because you're never just going to be running around as the mouse. The mouse is kind of like a morph ball, where it allows you to enter very small areas that you couldn't get to with any other transformation. But the thing is, when you're in these little mouse corridors, there are these snake things that are also in the corridors, and you would think... Like, and of course, the snakes go after the mouse and they attack and they do normal damage like any other enemy would. And you would think, like, hey, now I have the bite power-up, now I can fight back against these snakes. But no, when you are crawling through these mouse corridors, you cannot bite anything.
Okay, that's pure nonsense.
Yeah.
Now, do these power-ups cost anything? No. Or is it just, they just unlock by themselves?
The power-ups unlock by themselves. So the transformation power-ups unlock by themselves through beating bosses or by exploring levels and finding hidden areas. You get these animal transformations and their power-ups. There are other power-ups that you can get, like you can shoot a fireball, or you can have like this this wheel of scimitars that flies around you as a shield. Those ones are purchasable.
Hmm.
And they're not necessary for beating the game. They're like the fireball one is necessary for completing like a side quest. Oh wait, no. The fireball power-up is actually necessary for beating the game, because there's an enemy that you have to beat with a fireball who will drop an item that then you have to give to someone else.
Yeah.
In order to, like, complete this little miniature trade sequence.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I finished the game, and then I started up a second run on what they call Hero Mode. And Hero Mode, pretty much any animal transformation that you would get from a boss fight, you start with that at the beginning of the game. So it just allows you to do a lot more of the exploration quicker. So you're not, like, getting another power-up and then re-entering levels and seeing where you can use it. All the levels do have little indicators like, hey, there's this many things that you can find in this level, which is kind of cool, I guess. But the game, it's just over super quickly.
Hmm. Maybe they'll come out with Shantae DLC.
Yeah, maybe. Well, there are going to be like more playable characters that will unlock. As far as I know, is that there are no plans to do more actual stages.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's not so much that I object to it being short. It feels wrong that it's so short because you have all of these skills that you don't ever actually use.
Maybe they'll come out with the game with a separate character to play as, like Shovel Knight with the Plague Knight. Instead, it'll be Shane, and he'll use a sword like a real person.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Why Shane? What is that a reference to?
I'm not referencing anything. There's Shantae, and then there's Shane.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I just figured that'd be the male version of
it. I thought you were, like, making a reference to something, like there's some character named Shane in some other game that...
No.
Okay.
You can play as Shane.
That's good. Yeah, it's a good name.
Yeah, sure. Screw you, everybody listening is cracking up right now.
Because of your Shane jokes?
Screw you. What? I'm so underappreciated here. Why do I come to these things? Why?
So that I'm not alone.
I hate you so much.
So that when Ryan is busy shitting in an outhouse with Gary Busey, I have someone to talk to.
That's not a mental image I want. Oh my god.
That probably burns so good though.
Oh, it does.
It's like pooping lava.
It's like watching a train wreck. You just can't look away.
It's like Mighty Number 9.
It's like Mighty Number 9.
You can't stop yourself even though you know it's horrible.
It may cause some irreparable damage.
It may have. It may. I might have permanent damage from Mighty Number 9. It's the only game that I've played, I don't know, within the last 10 years where I legitimately had to stop myself from throwing the controller. Like, God damn that fucking game. But I think that's going to bring the show to a close. You got any more games you want to throw out there real quick before?
Yeah.
I'm still playing Persona 3. I made some progress in that.
Okay.
Nothing really new to report there. It's, you know.
Persona.
All the stuff that I said about it before is just more of it.
Mm. What's next?
Next is the Super Nintendo show.
Ooh.
And like we talked about at the beginning of the month, I'm actually going to be posting the Super Nintendo show we recorded in December. So that kind of gives us a break.
What are we going to talk about next week then?
Next week, maybe we'll do the official show and just get that one in the bank.
Okay.
So that it's just ready to post at the end of the month.
Maybe we'll just come out with a couple of movie.
We got to catch up on some Space Worlds.
I can't remember what we're on. Firefly.
We just did Ariel, so I think we got 3 or 4 episodes left. But yeah, maybe we'll knock out a few of those. I actually have a couple more space things that I want to talk about.
Oh, I actually watched Gravity last night.
Oh, yeah? What'd
you think? For the first time. Incredibly overrated.
Yeah?
It just looks really... The entire thing is just there visually. Like, hey, look what we can do with a camera. Like, yeah, good for you. Like, there's just no real depth to the story.
We can have a serious discussion about the art of filmmaking, what's really important when you're constructing a film. But
there's like barely any story. There's barely, all right, this chick is just...
But I don't want to have that discussion about the art of filmmaking with Gravity because I don't really like it either.
Ryan liked it so much. I don't...
Because Ryan just really appreciated the cinematography, I think.
I mean, that's all that movie was. There's just nothing... Okay. There's no depth to it. It's just like, all right, she made Earth. Good job. I know. She was like lying on the mud and then she stood up and there's just this big blob of mud on her left boob. And I was like, all right.
I didn't notice that.
It was very distracting. I'm just staring at this mud stain on her boob.
You like wanted to tap on the screen. You got something right here.
Let me get that.
It's okay. There's nothing sexual. I only do this to animals. Because I'm Wes.
Oh.
That's enough for one day.
Yeah.
Till next time, everybody.
So long.